This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Much of the focus in this industry is on the hardware and software used to put digital signage networks together, and increasingly, mercifully, on content and creative. Not that much attention gets paid to the server side of the business, installing screens and fixing devices when things go wrong. Even less attention is paid to keeping the hardware clean. That's what Tom Milner and his UK-based company, Service and Support, are all about, and has been for 10 years. Milner has built up his install and service business in the UK and Ireland, and more recently, built a book of business in North America for something called Pristine Screen, a service company specifically in the business of keeping screens clean inside and out. In this talk, we get into the roots of his business, how it's grown, and the decision to get into a spin-off that's all about keeping screens pristine. So Tom, thanks for joining me. I gather it's not the loveliest day over in the UK.
No, it's pretty wet over here today, Dave.
Oh, well. Can you give me a rundown on your company?
Sure. What I'll start off with is just a little bit of history for you, if you like, a little bit of a history lesson. I've been in the digital signage industry and, you know, sort of surfing around it for the last sort of 15, 20 years myself in various different guises. But I started my first business, Service and Support, which is a global installation and maintenance partner to everybody, basically. Whether you're a manufacturer, a reseller, or an integrator, you know, we work for all those types of companies all around the world. We've built up a partner network that we rely on quite heavily for all the countries outside of the UK and Ireland. And over the years, you know, we've had peaks and troughs where some of our customers have perhaps not had as much work as they wanted, so therefore we've suffered. So I look for ways to fill in what we do when we're not actually carrying out the normal day-to-day works that we do carry out. And I came up with what I thought was a brilliant idea, which we're still hammering out and making sure we deliver everything that everyone wants. But it was to basically clean screens, because in all my years in the digital signage industry, I've never seen a screen cleaned, or if it has been cleaned, it's been cleaned by a cleaner who's using furniture polish or something like that, which, you know, can obviously ruin a screen. So we came up with Pristine Screen as the brand, and we've focused on North America for the moment and Canada, and we've had quite some success with casinos and some major manufacturers about to come on board. But you know, one of the key things that we felt we had to do was try and get out there and educate people as to, you know, why they need to keep their screens clean. And I'll go through that in a minute for you. So we joined the Digital Signage Federation, which I know you're fully aware of, because you're a board member, I think, aren't you?
Yep.
We've had nothing but support from those guys over there, and we're really glad that we joined. It's been a real experience for us. Obviously, we've been to quite a few events when myself and my partner Stefan had actually been at Digital Signage Week or Digital Signage Expo, Infocom, all the various events that go on. You know, we always try to make sure that we went to any Digital Signage Federation event that was going on as well. So it's been quite interesting, but education is where we're at now and what we want to try and achieve. And that's why we're actually working out a program at the moment with the cooperation of the guys at the DSF, to actually bring this forward and hopefully educate the masses.
Mm-hmm. What happens, you know, stick with the screen thing.
Yeah.
If you don't clean a screen, what happens?
Well, typically the worst thing, and obviously this comes into play with any digital signage rollout that's out there, it actually reduces the opportunity for the customer to enjoy an early return on investment, because you'll have an early life failure if you don't keep your screens clean. Because it's not just about keeping the front side sparkly and looking like new. That's obviously quite a key part of it. But, you know, some of the managed services that we actually offer are to actually clean the rear vents and the fans and make sure that everything's working, you know, within its correct parameters, rather than having what we term as the internal fur coat, which develops over the years. And in some cases, depending on the environment, you know, within weeks it can develop. So, we try and make sure that all our prospective customers are aware of when they buy a screen, they want to get the most value out of it and obviously have it working as long as possible. And it's amazing to me that people don't want their screens cleaned, because especially if they've got advertising on there or if it's a quick service restaurant with a menu board, that they need to look clean, because otherwise it detracts from the opportunity to sell to the customers.
And how do they get dirty? I understand ambient dust and all that, but is it malice or just the day-to-day?
It does depend on the environment quite a bit. The worst possible environment is something that is similar to the worst one in our point of view is anywhere where there are deep fat fryers in restaurants, because all the deep fat fryers will actually bring up effectively atomized grease into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And with the static of the screen, it gets attracted straight to it. So when you mix that with the dust that's in the air as well, you can, in a very busy quick service restaurant, you could actually have a fairly thick layer of dust and grease on your screen that is actually starting to eat away at the front of the screen if it's one of the sort of flexible plasticky type screen faces.
Hmm.
If it's glass, then it's fairly well protected, but you still will remove the opportunity to see a bright sparkly image. You want something that is obviously going to keep that clear. So we've come up with a number of different ways of doing this. And, we've got the basic screen cleaners that, they're our own brand. We've worked quite heavily with some of our chemical partners to actually do the right thing for the environment and obviously make sure that we're not using anything that's horrible. And I don't know whether you've ever experienced Stefan doing his typical sales pattern, but he'll typically spray his bottle of cleaner straight into his mouth. It does give him the odd funny tick, but it's perfectly safe to do it because the majority of our products are actually water, but it's distilled water. It's very, very clean. But the special sauce, if you like, that's added to it, that's the stuff that actually will clean the screen and leave it without a smear. What it actually also does is it prevents buildup of dust and grime. So the other opportunity is to actually apply a coating to a screen. And this is kind of similar to the stuff that you see in the aftermarket car industry these days, ceramic coatings. There's lots of different types and they vary in prices, but you can actually then enjoy an antibacterial quality as well. So if you're in a touchscreen environment, and I'm sure you remember the big reports that came out of the UK about, I think it was the Daily Mail and the Metro newspaper in London, they did some random testing of McDonald's restaurants for fecal matter. On the front of their touchscreens. Now, this wasn't a shock to us, but they came through as having far too many parts per million as actual fecal matter on the screens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What they didn't test was the door handles, the glass, the tabletops. You know, I don't know if you have them in Canada there, but you know, in the UK we actually have little Samsung Galaxy tabs in enclosures for the kids to play on while they're eating. Mm-hmm. They didn't test any of that. And what they'd actually find is that the build-up was probably worse than just on the touchscreens, because in actual fact, you go into any of these McDonald's or Burger King's or anyone else, and you will actually you'll be able to enjoy seeing them, clean them on a very regular basis, you know, potentially up to even every hour. But we still say they're using the wrong products.
Huh. Yeah, certainly when I'm in public environments, I open a lot of things with my elbows.
I've almost got to the point where I want to carry a pair of rubber gloves around with me, but I think I'd start to feel too much like a murder detective.
My son plays disc golf, and he's got one of these lights that you can
the black lights
play disc golf at night. Yeah. And I was saying, I should have one of these for when I travel for hotel rooms. And then I thought, no, I don't want to know.
Dave, I've done it. I've got one and I've done the hotel rooms. And yeah, obviously I've visited a fair amount of hotels in Vegas, and it is literally like a murder scene or a Jackson Pollock painting. It's disgusting. the trouble is, you know, us untrained, you know, flashing a black light on this stuff is easy. But you can't actually tell what each individual substance actually is. All you can actually tell is that it's not been cleaned.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you look at the various industries that we want to get involved with, you know, one of the biggest ones that we're chasing after at the moment is actually the cruise ship industry, because there's so many occurrences of illnesses, you know, mass illnesses on these
norovirus.
Yeah. And it's actually all completely preventable. So what we're actually trying to impress on people is that actually if you protect yourself by having our coatings, having our specialist cleaning solutions, you can actually mitigate completely the opportunity for people to catch nasty diseases from the environment that you're asking them to come into. And it doesn't matter whether it's a restaurant or an ATM, a bank, a cruise ship, as I mentioned. Yeah, any hard, non-porous surface can be cleaned and coated by our products. Unfortunately, we can't do the porous surfaces because, you know, that's just impossible. It just dissipates into the surface itself. But, you know, there's a tremendous opportunity to just keep things clean and stop spreading nasty viruses and bacteria around.
I'm guessing a lot of people who you speak with about this not approvingly and say that makes perfect sense.
Yep.
But I don't have the budget for this.
That's definitely the response that we started with 3 years ago. And it was almost a door shut in your face immediately after you told them the story. But that's changing quite a lot now, quite a lot. You know, we've actually got some of the manufacturers that were in final stages of talking to of having these products either bundled in with their screens or actually applied during manufacturing. They understand it and they actually want to improve this sort of stuff for their customers. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting because, especially in North America, because obviously it's so litigious over there, if anyone realizes that they've caught something nasty from a particular environment that they've walked into and it could have been prevented, well, you know, dial 555, you know, I'll claim for you, is going to start happening. And companies are going to have to protect themselves against it. So we feel that we're right here at the beginning. You know, we're having the hard slog, but we feel it's going to get easier and easier over the next couple of years.
So if I'm an end user, per site, per year, how many... I understanding there's variables based on if it's a fish and chip shop versus a florist shop or something. How many times are you going to need a cleaning and what roughly is that going to cost?
Well, as you mentioned, there's lots of variances. But, you know, let's take something standard, but, you know, a high user environment. So let's take something simple and small like an ATM. Now, there's lots of ATMs out there. Now, some might argue that every country is moving to a cashless society. But honestly, I still think we're probably 10 to 15, maybe even 20 years away from going fully cashless because, you know, there's certain amounts within our population that just don't trust plastic at all. So they'd prefer to carry cash. So they have to go to an ATM to draw that out. Now, I don't know what it's like in Canada and the US, but certainly in the UK, you can go up to an ATM and you can basically, you know, sometimes walk away from it because it's just that nasty. You know, if it's been a Friday night and you've gone there on a Saturday morning and, you know, perhaps someone's thrown up on the ATM or urinated on it, you just can't tell. But, you know, that's what happens. The unfortunate thing is that us humans, we're horrible. We have to plan for the worst. So an environment like that, you're probably looking at, you know, potentially, not for us to deliver as a managed service necessary because that would be expensive. But, yeah, you'd actually be looking at, passing this into the general banking staff. Because they are tasked already with cleaning these things, but again, with the wrong sort of products. You know, they're full of alcohol or full of nasty stuff that actually, if they leave too much on there, that picks up on your fingers and you could get just as ill by putting that in, by eating a burger or whatever after you've been to the ATM because it's still on your fingers. If you use our products and you use them on a regular basis, so if they went out and cleaned them every day, it might not, apart from the time, it might not cost them any more than 3 or 4 cents a clean per ATM. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very cheap, it's very cost effective, but it's also very effective for guarding against the worst case. Now, the crunch point for anyone with the, that have got hold of the purse strings is, well, how much of a risk is this to us? But you've got to counter that with how much do I want to look after my customer? Yeah. That's the point.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
In terms of your core business, service and support, how large of a company is it? Is it largely virtual with contract people?
Well, in the UK, it's all direct employees for the field-based staff. Obviously, all direct employees in the warehouse and in the head office. But we've built up our partner network over the last 10 years or so, where we've actually, with all the various different countries that we've been into now for our customers, we've actually got a coverage of over 8,500 engineers across the whole of the world, which is quite a considerable amount. And I know that there's various, AV alliances and everything else, but there's one crucial difference to us compared to those AV alliances. From what I've seen, all of those alliances are actually made up of resellers. So there's always a risk there that in that country that you've asked one of your alliance partners to go to, that they might do the dirty on you and actually try and steal your customer. We don't sell software. We don't sell hardware. You know, we'll supply the odd small piece of kit if it's been forgotten off the bill of materials, just to help out. But, we're there to provide labor services predominantly, logistics services, project management services. So there's never a risk of losing your customer to us, because we don't go after those customers directly. We only work with our partners to actually deliver those projects. So it's a much less risky approach compared to those alliances, in my opinion. But as I always say to every new customer that we come across, we like to think that we're actually just the best kept secret in the AV industry as a whole, because our name is very generic. You know, when we run help desk services for our customers, you know, we can answer the phone as service and support, and then just tag the customer's name on the end of it or at the beginning of it, and it works. You know, it's I didn't realize how good a name it was when I first started, but it does work.
Right. Yeah, because you're never going to have somebody answer saying this is AVL Tech.
Yeah.
And the client going, well, I thought you were supposed to be support for Brand X.
Exactly.
Huh. So how many direct employees do you have?
In the UK, we're around 15 at the moment. Mm-hmm. But what we actually deliver with those 15 people, I would say is somewhat equivalent to a team of probably double that. What we actually try and impress upon our UK-based customers is that we charge a national rate for each of the various activities that we do. And when we quote a piece of work, we'll actually quote it on the basis that, you know, we've understood the piece of work and that's our price. Unless there's something completely external and not the fault of our customer and not our fault either, you know, we won't go looking for more money for that. So it doesn't matter whether it's in London, Edinburgh, Aberdeen, Birmingham, we charge the same rate. We don't charge travel time or anything like that. Whereas a lot of the freelancers, and I'm not knocking the freelancers at all because they're good guys, but they haven't got national geographic coverage, so they will typically charge traveling time on top of you know, their daily rates. So, you know, sometimes we're told that we're too expensive, but when you actually look at the cost of travel compared to our national rate, in addition to their daily rate, we actually come out about the same. So it's not just about the price, though. It's about what we actually deliver in a standard day. So, you know, for, if you like, I hate the term, but for a standard hang and bang rollout of screens onto walls with, you know, very little requirement to do anything apart from a nice tidy job behind the screen itself. You know, we can actually, on a 55-inch screen, single screens, we can actually, with a two-man team, hang around 12 to 14 of those a day without any issues at all. Mm-hmm. You know, that's including disposing of all the rubbish, you know, all the packaging and everything else. Yeah, taking old equipment away. We do all these services for our customers, and, you know, most of our customers, and I'm going to touch wood just next to me here, most of our customers we've actually kept all the way through our existence. You know, we've never actually lost a customer that has been valuable to us.
What over the space of 10 years has changed?
Oof. Now there's a question. Up until yesterday, I would have said the thing that's probably changed the most is that there are far less sharks out there that are just looking to, you know, shift tin, make the margin, and get out of the customer's way as much as possible. It seems to be that there are far more companies now focused on not just delivering the initial rollout of a signage deployment, but actually also delivering managed services thereafter. So whether that's content management, content creation, maintenance services, where obviously they'd engage with companies like us. You know, they're actually looking to keep those customers, you know, over 3 to 5 years, you know, potentially the length or the life cycle of the products they're installing. So they get to do it again with the, you know, most up-to-date products thereafter. So that's probably the biggest change I think has happened over the last 10 years. And it's probably only really been the last three or four where, you know, the larger companies like Diversified, you know, and some of the, you know, the agency companies like OpenEye Global and CRI, you know, they're all actually looking to engage with customers, not just for an initial consultation and, you know, perhaps a delivery out of it, but also a relationship that, you know, they're actually true partners now of those customers. And I think that's the biggest change. You know, it's real partnerships now. But I mentioned up until yesterday, and there's some fairly big stories in the UK about one of our out-of-home companies about to go bust, if they haven't gone bust already. I haven't caught up today. But it's from what I experienced in the majority 10 years ago, where there's lots of smoke and mirrors, people saying that they're doing well and, you know, there's no problems. But I've got to say that it does seem to be more limited to the smaller scale out-of-home companies rather than the general AV business now. I think the AV business has actually cleaned itself up quite a bit and it's doing quite well. So, you know, the larger digital out-of-home companies, they're doing a good job for their customers. They're selling advertising. They're doing all the right things. But the smaller ones, yeah, they're either trying to do something different but not keeping up with the payments and everything else that they're due to pay out. And it just it leaves a rotten taste in everyone's mouth, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I over and over, because I do consulting and because I write, and people call me, they send me emails, ask for advice about starting a digital out-of-home network. Mm-hmm. And I always just tell them, it's really hard. Advertising is a tough, tough business. And I think...
Do they want to carry on after you've given them that advice?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Almost always.
Yeah?
Because it looks easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I would say that anyone new to this, and you know, we actually do support quite a few resellers. You know, that are, you know, they've perhaps existed in the managed print service industry previously, and they want to get into digital signage and everything else. I mean, there's one company that we work with at the moment, but they're actually looking at it more from a technical point of view, and you know, they're actually just talking about modern technology rather than just digital signage. You know, they see digital signage as a massive growth because they've got lots of blue chip customers that aren't actually using digital signage today. And obviously because they're their customers already, it's an easy way in for them. But they've got no experience of delivering it. So they want to consult with companies like me, where basically we can advise them and help them and obviously enable them to almost hit the ground running. But it is a fairly steep learning curve these days because not everything is the same.
Mm-hmm. The technology has changed over the years. You have a lot more fanless devices, solid-state drives, on and on and on. You've got integrated displays like system-on-chip displays and so on.
Yeah.
Is display tech and the related tech more reliable now?
Honestly, I would say no, because products are not being looked after. And I'll give you my experience. I used to work for a fairly large betting and gaming company in the UK. And when I first joined, it was just when LCD displays were coming out. So plasma had already come. It was in its heyday, but LCDs were just coming out. So it was just coming to a point where the price point was right that you could actually use them in store. But previous to that, they'd actually used CRT screens. And some of these screens have been in these betting shops for over 25 years with no maintenance whatsoever. So, you know, the investment that that company made into those screens, I mean, they've got it back in spades, but, they wanted or were expecting a similar sort of investment with the LCD displays. And they weren't getting it. You know, some of these displays were not lasting 6 months because effectively what, you know, they'd previously bought consumer CRT TVs and they were expecting to buy consumer LCD TVs to replace them because they had to have tuners in them.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work like that because they're not expecting to be on 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that there was an awful lot of early life failure.
Does it make a difference? Buying commercial grade, buying the 16.7 and 24.7?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the various electronic components that actually make up the screens. I mean, there's so few individual parts in a LCD or LED display these days. I mean, just moving to LED instead of the the various cathode tubes that they used to have, which were effective like mini fluorescent tubes behind the screens. Uh-huh. Yeah, they were very, very unreliable. They just burn out very early. To be honest, the types and grades of capacitors and resistors that are used in the power supplies and everything else, they are there, and they've spent the extra pennies on those individual parts to make them robust enough to actually warrant them properly for 18 hours of use a day, or indeed 24/7. But you certainly can't use a consumer product in that environment.
Will you work with a company to do the service for them if they just put in TVs?
We'll happily do it, but we'll be advising them all the time. This is a mistake, to the point where they ask us to stop and either change their minds or, they start to see early life failure within a couple of months. In the nicest possible way, we'd make more money out of that. But you don't keep a customer.
So you're in the UK and Ireland primarily for service and support.
Yep.
Do you envision going into North America, or is that just a market that's kind of covered?
We do feel that we're going to go into North America, but in a different way for service and support. So we've got some very, very robust partners that are companies just like us. But we've got global customers now that are actually just asking for us to actually have a presence there. They don't care that it's not our own engineers, because they've obviously had the experience of using our partners via us previously. But they're asking us to get more and more involved with certain global projects that are out there. So we're getting very, very close to actually starting up in the US now. And if you bear in mind that every piece of revenue that we have is from delivering some kind of service. It's kind of scary, but it's actually more gratifying potentially to do it in the US, because you don't have to worry about salary payments at the end of the month because you're outsourcing all of that. The actual in-house resource that you've got is going to be fairly minimal. Obviously, you've still got to keep up with the payments to your partners, but I'm much more comfortable with a much bigger geography like the US to leave that that heavy investment in staff to somebody else on that score.
Tom, thank you.
Thanks, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.